Welcome to the Bible Talks with Josh and Heather.
The Bible Talks is a show that discusses deep theology in a simple way.
If you're interested in theology but don't consider yourself a deep theologian, hey, this is the show for you.
We're Josh and Heather Tice, and we minister to and lead Southern Hills Baptist Church in Las Vegas.
You can find this and previous episodes on our iTunes podcast or at KVXL 101.1 Experience Liberty Radio.
Now it's time to get started, and I have a great question to begin today.
Okay, I'm ready. Let's go.
This is episode 16, and we're going to be talking about foods, our favorite foods from the Bible land.
All right, that'll be awesome.
It's going to be good. It's going to be delicious. And I have a treat for you because I've had a discussion already that about something with kind of, I guess, prophecy that plays into Israel today. So we'll get to that, but let's start out with something easy.
Okay, easy. Ready? I'm ready. Okay, so every single time we do this, I've been thinking about it now that we are 16 episodes in. I feel like I need to come to you with some surprise questions sometime.
Really?
Yeah, because I feel like.
Are you up to the challenge on this?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I feel like you're always trying to, you know, you shock me.
Okay. Well, I'll make you a deal.
What?
And this is all of our listeners. You are my witnesses. Okay.
Okay. Go.
All two of you, listen up. All right. Here's the thing. Next podcast, you come ready with a question.
Yeah.
And you do the fun question. We'll see how it goes.
It's probably not going to happen.
Okay. Well, I have one today, and I said it was going to be easy, but I don't think it really is, because I think it's actually going to be very difficult. Because right now, you and I are in the phase of trying to live a healthy life. So what does that mean?
Yeah.
We are not eating a lot of food that we really want to eat.
We're on a food cleanse currently while we're recording this.
Yeah.
And we're not eating grains, dairy,
and sugar.
Sugar.
But more than sugar right now, I'm missing the grains. I didn't know I loved grains so much, and it makes me feel full. So here's the question.
Okay.
What's your favorite junk food indulgence?
Oh, that is so easy. It's popping to mind right now.
Really?
Yeah, popcorn
and
icy. So go to the movies, get me a giant icy and a bucket of popcorn, and I will just be the happy camper that I need to be.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
That's how I'm going to come off this diet.
I could see that with you.
Yeah.
I could see that with you because you've always loved the Slurpee thing, you know. But I don't know. You know, mine might surprise you. You probably think I'm going for chocolate or something. I do love ice cream. It's right up there.
Mm-hmm.
But do you know what my junk food indulgence is? It's two things because they're a combination meal. It's Dr. Pepper and pizza.
Yeah, I can see that.
Oh, pizza. I'm like a teenager. I could eat pizza every day.
It's all.
But my body does not respond like it did when I was really a teenager.
Yeah. Good
stuff. So, yeah. All right. That was not much fun at all.
What kind of pizza?
Papa John's. There's only one Papa in town.
No.
Papa John's. Don't go for that Papa Murphy's. It's messed up.
No Papa Murphy's. You have to cook it yourself. That's a scam.
Yeah.
I like Domino's.
That's weird because you are the one that got me hooked on Papa John's.
I know. I liked Papa John's for years, but
I ate Domino's. And now you're like, you're just trying to be opposite of me, aren't you? Just trying to stir up conflict.
That's what I do.
Yeah. So, Papa John's, let us know. Hey, just for fun.
I would love to know.
Why don't you
weigh
in on this pizza debate? Let us know your favorite pizza, unless it's Papa Murphy's, because we don't want you to embarrass yourself. So
that would be embarrassing to say that out loud.
Yeah,
it's okay for you to like it. Just do it privately.
Yeah, keep it in secret.
Yeah.
But if you have a favorite pizza place, let us know what it is. Put it in the comments and tell us why. In fact, Josh, what makes Domino's the best?
You know what I like is they put like this garlic powder around the crust. It's really good. So good. It tastes very garlicky.
Really?
Yeah, baby.
I think Papa John's, my favorite thing is the sauce. They've got a great flavorful sauce.
Very sweet.
Yeah, it's so good. And then they just know how to put the right amounts of everything on.
Okay, so
balanced.
So sticking on the theme of food, today's discussion is entitled The Best Foods of the Bible Lands. Now, we went to Israel back in November, and we'll be going again. November of 2019. And by the way, you can join us. We'd love for you to come. All you have to do is contact our church offices at 702-388-7422 and speak with Melanie or whoever's there about joining us with our Bible Lands tour that's coming up in November of 2019. Depending on when you're listening, that might be very soon, so go ahead and let us know. But this episode, we're talking about the best foods that we had in the Bible lands on our last trip to Israel.
Okay, so we're going to start with the least favorite, right?
Yeah, we're doing a top five each. You've picked five, and I picked five. And we're going to start with five and move up to the very best.
Okay, well, before we tell our favorites, I'm going to say something that was very, of all the good food we had, there was one thing that was disappointing.
What's
and
that?
I think it needs to be stated.
Okay, what?
So we eat Mediterranean food a lot here.
Love it, love it.
And we have, all the time, we get this cucumber salad. I will go and get it takeout and just have that for lunch. It's, what is in it? It's lemon juice, mainly in oil and salt and pepper.
Olive oil,
dressing.
Lemon juice, salt and pepper.
That's all it is.
And
so
it's
simple.
Cucumbers, diced onions, diced
tomatoes.
So good.
Like, it's something I should be making at home.
Yes.
But I have yet to do that.
Yeah.
But I'm all excited to get there because I know Israel's going to have it, right?
Yeah.
And they do, but every place we went, I don't know if I just went to the wrong places.
You know why? Do you know why?
I
know why. Because what we eat is Persian. It's Iranian. It's not Israeli.
But
so Israel has their own version. It's not the one that you like. Where we go are Persian restaurants.
Yeah, but there's no like laws against
making
it that way. It's not like, you know, it's kosher.
You never know.
Or something, right?
You never know,
I mean,
over there.
It's cucumbers.
No, it's just they make it different. So I think the version that you like is Persian.
Yeah, probably.
You like the Persian version.
Oh, that's fun. So I have to say it was okay. But it was not as good, like, even to little things like how they sliced the cucumber. It was long slices,
right.
You know, which
was
odd.
Now, Heather was really upset about how they sliced the cucumbers.
Yeah, so I'm like such a prima donna. But it really was something I was looking forward to eating every day, multiple times a day.
Okay, but what was your favorite?
Okay,
begin with
so
number
starting
five.
With my favorite. This really surprised me because I don't think I normally like this. But one of the hotels we were at, which they have amazing huge buffets, and that's where I discovered this, they had something called date honey. And I would dip a croissant in it. And it's so naturally sweet in a good way. It's like, you can just taste how natural it is. But I was surprised I like the date flavor in it because I typically don't like anything with date in it.
Yeah.
It's not my thing. Not
my jam.
She
doesn't like going on dates.
And but I love the date honey, and it became something I ate every day for breakfast.
Yeah, you
so
did.
Good.
The breakfasts were awesome, man. Whenever you the breakfast, and then I see you get those little rolls and dip it in the date honey.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember thinking one of the last days, ooh, you're going to miss that when it's all over, sitting down. Okay, here's mine.
Number five
is the hummus. Number five.
Hummus.
The hummus. Now, if you've had hummus here in the States, it's okay. It's good. But there, to me, it's still, it really is, it's the best. And the reason is because they put so much extra virgin olive oil right
into
the hummus.
Yes, they do. It's always just sitting right on top. Oh, my goodness. So
fattening,
much of it.
So good. And you take that bread, that pita bread, and you dip it in there and you eat the hummus. But we had hummus. They have hummus almost at every meal.
That would have been my number six. That was really, really good. I wanted to put it on my list. I just didn't have room.
Well, that's where I put my number five. What's your number four?
Okay, number four. I chose something that it's very unusual. I don't even know what to call it, but it was like a pudding, a chocolate pudding. They would have it at breakfast, and it was in a little typical Jell-O container, but it had a layer of cream on the top. And I didn't have it for several days. Melanie, our church receptionist, was there, and she had organized the trip, and she kept telling me, you need to try this. It's so good. But I always thought, I'll just have it at dinner. And it wasn't until several days in. I noticed they never had great desserts at dinner. I kept thinking, where is this wonderful delicious dessert? And I found out why. It's because dinner, it has to do with their kosher laws.
Yeah, you can't serve dairy and meat in the same meal. And so since it's a dairy product, it only came out in the
morning.
And
even though they're separate, I could eat them together.
Right.
And mess it up.
Right. So at a buffet,
so they can't
you
even
only
put it
have
out.
Meats and everything else, or dairies and everything else. You cannot put them together.
So it's only at breakfast that you have all the dairy foods and dairy desserts. So about the third day in, I figured this out. And I began to eat it, and it is amazing. Adding that layer
what it was
of cream,
called?
I don't. Mm. But our tour guide told me it's something apparently his children love. So I think it's
it's a
child's dessert.
Yeah, our tour guide, who's Israeli, says the children of Israel love that.
The children of Israel and Heather love this dessert. So I began to have it for breakfast, dessert for breakfast, and I had to do it because, you know, that's the only time they had it out. But it was so good. It was it tasted very natural compared to sometimes the product that we have here. And then, like I said, I can't describe that cream. It was like a whipped cream, but oh my goodness, it was amazing.
Okay.
So good.
So here's my number four. I just loved this. It's called kanafe. Now,
Oh yeah, that was interesting.
We only had it once, and the reason is it was one of the only times we were in the Palestinian territory. Kanafeh is a traditional Palestinian dessert. It's made with cheese pastry soaked in a sweet sugar-based syrup. It's made out of a goat cheese, and what it is it's kind of fried on the outside. It's like a sweet mozzarella stick.
It's
so
hard to
weird
describe
to say. And
it's
like a
not
cheesecake.
Like a it's not like a cheese stick. But it's not a cheesecake either.
Right. It's so different.
It's really odd, which, by the way, they had cheesecake at breakfast, too. Again, going with the dairy. Had to mention that.
The kanafeh is so wonderful. It tastes a little bit like baklava. There's a little bit of a taste.
Yeah, it's similar. It's like a cheese baklava.
It's like
I think
cheesy,
that's the best way to describe
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's like a cheese baklava, but not in
so
a
good.
Not in a mozzarella slash salty way. In a sweet slash cheesecake way. And what happened was we were driving through Palestine, and we had stopped off for lunch, and the bus driver got out to bring us a fast food type of a lunch. Now, it wasn't fast food like you're thinking. Literally, it was a nice little stand where we got a bunch of food brought onto the bus and what was called kanafeh. And he began to pass it out, and I thought to myself, I'm adventurous, but I thought, I don't want it. This looks disgusting. And I put it in my mouth, and oh, my goodness. What a great experience.
Yeah, our tour guide, Ezra, really likes to feed us.
Yeah.
That's why he's my favorite, because he is constantly like, taste this, try this.
Now, the kanafeh itself is not Israeli, and so there's only a few places in Jerusalem that you'll find it. It is a Palestinian dessert, and if you're ever around there, you've got to get some kanafeh.
So my
And
number...
when we go back, I am getting
oh,
me
yeah,
some kanafeh.
I'm sure.
Yes.
My number three is actually also when we were in that same area. It was actually the meal we had before the kanafeh. So we actually had street shawarma.
Yeah.
It was in pitas, and it's so good. But we had it in the Palestinian area. And thankfully, Josh and I both had different ones. They just kind of passed them out.
The shawarma is
both of them
insane.
Were incredibly good.
Yes.
So it's a shaved meat that's been on a spinning, on a spit.
Yeah, a vertical spit.
Yeah, and it rotates, and the meat's just been piled up high and
so very big throughout the
thin.
Entire Mediterranean region,
oh,
all the way
so
through
good.
Greece, all the way into Palestine, all the way through Israel, the entire region, and it's very popular. And there are several different kinds of shawarma there. First, there would be like a chicken shawarma. You know, they would pile all sorts of chicken, thigh and breast and everything on the spit, and then that was really good. And then there's lamb and beef, mm-hmm. and then there's straight lamb. And you can get these, and what they do is they put inside like a pickle relish, some other toppings.
What was that sauce? There's a white sauce,
like a cucumber.
Too.
It's a cucumber sauce.
Yeah, it's a
sauce.
Cucumber sauce. I forget
Holy
the name of it, but
cow.
They put that on there, and the whole thing just makes this giant pita, and it is amazing. And
yes.
Like I said, ours were flavored both differently, but they were both so good. And I'm a picky eater, but I would have easily finished either one. You know,
yeah.
So good.
No, genuinely and truly. Fantastic.
So, but even throughout Israel, there are many places to get street shawarma, and it is so, so very good.
Okay, so my number three is got to be the coffee and the breads. So I put coffee and breads. Why do I put them
Interesting.
Together? Yeah, because the coffee, first of all, was fantastic every place we went, but there were a couple places we went where we got some Turkish coffee, and yeah, that is strong.
See,
Betty.
And I miss that because there were some people that had very definite opinions on the Turkish coffee. They didn't like it because it was so strong.
So strong.
I thought you were one of them.
No. I loved it.
I missed that. I guess I got you
so strong.
There.
Little milk in there. Really good coffees. But then the breads every morning. They had so many breads, and so I've been craving that big time since being back these last couple months. And they had all these wonderful sweet breads that you would that you could eat right along with the coffee. Made a very nice little breakfast. Yeah, definitely.
All right. My number two, we're getting close to the very best food. What will it be? Can you imagine? We've already named shawarma. That's what you think of, right? So what will be number one or number two? Number
what
two.
What is your number two?
For me, is something that you might have been thinking of, because it's definitely something from the East, Middle East. It is falafel.
Falafel.
And I've had it here in the States. I don't like it. Anytime I've had it, I've thought it's kind of gross, but it tastes different there. I don't know what is different, but it's basically chickpeas,
yeah.
right? Made
yeah.
from chickpeas, all
right.
blended up, and then they fry it.
Right.
And so it's got this hard outer shell. Almost looks like a hush puppy,
yeah.
I think. It's this round ball, but it's so good
Some
there.
People are thinking as they're listening to this, I don't like it. And I just want you to know, you don't have to feel awful about it.
Aha! That was so bad. That was so bad. I should have shawarmed you that he was going to say that. That wasn't as good either. It was even worse. Oh, wah, my goodness. Wah. We're very hungry right now.
You don't have to feel awful about it.
No, that was actually really pretty
Thank
good.
Thank you. Thank you.
I tried to come back with something, but I got nothing.
No, you've got nothing
so,
on that.
But the falafel, do you like it here in the States?
No, I don't. And I don't really like it there,
oh,
to be
really?
Honest. No, I tried it.
It's
I'll
so
eat it if I have
there.
To.
Oh,
I just don't
so
like
good.
Falafel.
It is amazing. Yeah. He's wrong. In Israel, it tastes different. It's so good.
I like how Heather always says that I'm wrong whenever it's a personal opinion, as if, like, emphatically, empirically, I'm wrong. How about I just
I know you
I don't
better
like it.
Than you know yourself, Josh Tice.
Okay. All right. So I'm wrong. Falafel is good. Number two.
I can't wait to hear what your number two. I can't imagine what it's going to be.
Number two is it's very broad in general. It's called the buffets. Now, the reason I say that is because, first of all, being a Vegas boy, I love buffets. But every breakfast and every lunch is a veritable buffet. So you have a chance to eat anything and try new things. And so for me, one of the only ways to really try new things, it gets nerve-wracking. You're sitting at a restaurant. You want to order something good.
Especially someplace where you're not used to the menu.
Right.
Here, I like to go to a nice restaurant versus a buffet and I order a specific thing. But you're right. There, being able to taste.
Yeah, for example, I mean, you could go, I remember you had like 20 different kinds of olives you could taste. And so, you know, I'd put different olives on my plate and find out which was my favorite, or the cheese platters. And the fact that they had so many different cheeses from the region rather than just American-style cheeses. I love Wisconsin, but let me go to, let me see some Middle Eastern cheeses. So the buffets were fantastic because I got to try so many different kinds of meats, so many different kinds of breads, so many different kinds of cheeses and fruits and vegetables, and it was just fantastic, fantastic. The buffets.
Yes, good answer. And I can get on board with that. Like I said,
and the
big
nice thing about
in the States
those,
on buffets. But
and those buffets
really
aren't
good.
Like some of the buffets you can go to where it's just like the food's old and it seems a little
dirty.
They
do keep them very fresh, yeah.
Yeah, because the hotels where we stay at, that's where the buffets are. The hotels where it's not like stopping off at a little side buffet. They're hotel-run buffets. They're so clean and fresh and just the highest quality. So definitely the buffets. Number two.
All right, so here we are to number one.
Wow. Okay, I'm nervous because I'm not sure what your number one is, and it's probably going to be a disagreement with mine.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't know, because I'm shocked that you haven't mentioned mine yet, my number one.
Go ahead.
Because I know you love it, too. It's
pomegranate
juice. The fresh squeezed pomegranate juice is, once I discovered that, I wanted it everywhere. Oh, it's so good, and you can't. Like the palm stuff, you know, the bottles of palm here in the States.
It's terrible. I came back and bought one.
It's not the same. Oh.
And it was terrible.
Yeah, but there, they have all these side vendors. Almost every vendor, even a small little shop, I mean, just a tiny little place that sells maps, will have right outside his shop a pomegranate squeeze, like this press, this metal, large, giant metal press. And it's so fun watching them fresh squeeze your pomegranate into the cup. It is so unlike anything I've ever had. It's fresh. It's if you get it squeezed right away, usually it's sweeter. I've heard that the longer it's out, the more, you know, once it's been squeezed, it can grow tart.
Right.
But even when it's a little bit tart, it's still really good.
Right.
Well, so I don't know how we're going to get that back unless we buy a pomegranate press. I think we need one.
Yeah, they were selling them in the market there, and we checked, and it was like, what was it, like $60?
It's just too heavy
like
to get
that.
Back. That's
and
the problem.
Bring it back. It
there, yeah, I don't think the price was bad there, but it's just too heavy.
All right. So you would say the pomegranate juice, which I would totally agree with, is amazing. And it's all over the Holy Land.
And it wouldn't be in your top five?
I knew you were going to put it, and I did not want to repeat one of yours, which also
clever.
Puts my number one in a little bit of a suspect light because I had at number one. I had at number one the shawarma.
Yeah.
Shawarma is, but we've already talked about it, so I switched it, and I put fruits and vegetables. The fruits and vegetables, to me, are amazing. I loved having the fruits and vegetables at every breakfast and dinner buffet. Just really fantastic. Now, I would have also put St. Peter's fish, because the first time I went, it was amazing, the restaurant we went to. This last time, I was very disappointed, not very good. So every time you go to Israel, there's always a St. Peter's lunch. St. Peter's fish lunch right on the Galilee. So you can look over the Galilee. You have a fish and they cook it for you. It's wonderful. I did not enjoy it this time. It was overcooked.
It's good, though, the fruits and vegetables, because that actually kind of leads into the very short discussion I want to have.
Yes.
All right. So when we went to Israel, one of the things that surprised me was it's very much a desert. Okay. And so I'm picturing, like many of you maybe, the land flowing with milk and honey. I knew there was some desert region, but I thought, okay, this is going to be a green place. It's going to be the promised land, right? It's going to be flourishing. And it's not that way. And so when I asked you about this, you told me that there are a couple of different theories. Is that the right
couple
term?
Of different ideas
yeah,
on this?
Ideas so, on it. So,
first of all, Americans come from a very bountiful place. So when we think of green, we're thinking of places like Washington State. We're thinking of places like Oregon, full of greenery. When we think of bounty, we're thinking of the Great Plains of the Midwest, where there are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles of corn. So when we get there and we see a desert region and there are a lot of farms, we think, man, kind of disappointing. I thought it was going to be like a jungle, but we can't expect Israel to be a jungle, right? So number one is perspective. Number two, idea of why do we not see that as much is because of the region in which we travel. So we did not spend any time in the Valley of Sharon. The Valley of Sharon is where the vast majority of the fruits and vegetables
come.
What
would that have been near?
That would have been between Tel Aviv and Jaffa, okay. On the coast. It would have been on the coast. It would have been on the Mediterranean.
Okay.
So there's a giant valley called the Valley of Sharon. You've heard of the Rose
well,
of Sharon.
Well, maybe we need to visit that next time.
that would have been really the farming region. Though there are farms all throughout
interesting
the Galilee.
Interesting fact, let me throw this in. I don't want to interrupt you, but interesting to me was the giant, massive, bigger than you can imagine, Valley of Armageddon.
Oh, yeah.
Or I guess it's Megiddo.
Yeah.
Right. I'm sorry. So the Battle of Armageddon, but it's at Megiddo. The Valley of Megiddo, it's just so much bigger. I always picture this very small valley. You've got to triple and quadruple that picture in your mind to get it there.
Huge.
But it's very green. They actually farm there, that region.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
But I don't, is that naturally green or have they done work there?
That's at the very tip edge of the Valley of Sharon. Yeah.
Okay. So that would be some of the natural green I'm thinking
right.
of.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So, but the theory, the question I had, too, is not only is it the land.
It would be like for those in California region, it would be like understanding what wine country looks like. So it is, some of it can be high desert, but very, very farmable because of the nature of the soil. But there's also the idea that for the last 2,000 years, while it was under the control of, the region's inhabitants and the Jews had been kicked out of the land before they came back, much of the region had been turned completely to desert because of the lack of cultivation. So there was no cultivation of the land. There was no, all of the trees had been hewn down. Much of it was really destroyed so that when Mark Twain goes to Israel in his book, Innocents Abroad, he describes
would that have been after 1948?
No, that would have been much before.
So before that,
right.
Okay, go ahead.
He sees a desert wasteland. Why does he see that? It's because the inhabitants of the land didn't care for it in the way that the modern Hebrews do, in the way that the Jews do. So so it's been only 50, 60 years since that time where they've had a chance to actually cultivate these farms and these communal places of living and really turn it once again to where the desert can once again bloom like a rose and rivers will flow through the deserts, as the prophecy states. So there's that theory as well. And that falls into the biblical concept of what the Deuteronomic covenant stated. The
right.
Deuteronomic covenant stated, this is a land that is flowing with milk and honey, but if you get into the land and you worship other gods, then I'm going to kick you out of the land, and if I kick you out of the land, then the land itself will stop producing. So there is a biblical spiritual theory, and that is the land has changed drastically over the last thousands of years, primarily because the children of Israel had to be kicked out of the land. You have the Assyrian captivity, you have the Babylonian captivity, and then finally you have the dysphoria because of a lack of reception of Messiah. Now you have the blessing of God literally taken from the land. And so some would say, well, is it possible for land to change? Of course. Everyone knows about the expansion
right.
of the Sahara Desert
yeah.
and other deserts. And so absolutely, what we see is the land today, agriculturally speaking, is probably not what Joshua entered into when he crossed over the Jordan originally.
So I hope that was interesting to you. I know that was something, thanks Josh for sharing that, that was something that really was a surprise to me when we went. It's still very beautiful and much to enjoy, but it was something that I did have questions about after being a student of the Bible and knowing about the continual promises in Deuteronomy.
There's one other aspect. We went in November, which is right before the rainy season. So it is stated, because I went in January, and it's very obvious in January how much greener Israel is as a whole.
But even in January, it doesn't only flourish for like 2 or 3 months.
It's 2 or 3 months, yeah.
So to me, that's still, even though because I asked our guide about that, and even though that is true, to me it doesn't quite cover the bountiful land, you know, I don't know. The promises that you go back to in Deuteronomy.
So I think those are a few answers that kind of help the Western mind get their mind around, okay, why exactly is it not what I would assume as the land flowing with milk and honey? Good question.
Yeah, so this has been a fun podcast. I hope you enjoyed that. A little taste of Israel, if you will, and then a little discussion.
Taste. I see what
I
you did there.
Yeah, that was cool. A little discussion on really the blessing of the land. So, now, on the next episode of the Bible Talks, we plan to discuss learning humility from Jesus. We're still on the study of Christ, Christology. And
we as humans have a hard time, right? Even followers of Christ staying humble and being humble. So what do we learn? What can we learn from humility as we look into the actual life of Christ? And that'll be on our next episode.
And we just want to ask you to do one thing as we end today. Would you subscribe to this podcast? Hopefully you already have, but maybe you've just joined us. Make sure you click on that and subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode.
If you subscribe, it's great because iTunes is able to send it right to you. You can subscribe on Podomatic if that's how you view or listen to these episodes, or you can go right to iTunes and subscribe. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, when the Bible talks,
we better listen.